Hi and welcome. You're listening to Nourish with Intention, and I'm your host, Nikita Mehta. In each episode, we explore inspiring conversations with wellness experts, innovators, and souls driven by a deep sense of purpose. I am so excited for you to tune into these conversations and find the tools to nourish your mind and body, both on and off your plates. In today's episode, I talk to James McCauley. James is so many things: a healer, musician, hypnotic breathwork therapist, neuro-linguistic specialist, and he ties all these together to create absolutely transforming experiences. His work empowers people to release emotions, traumas, experiences that are not serving them anymore, and that are probably manifesting in our bodies, both physically and mentally. What I love most about his work is that James encourages us to feel. In a world where we're always told to think, use our minds, be rational, he wants us to tune into our emotions and intuition. If you are ready to be guided with some powerful transformational tools, you'll enjoy this episode. Here we go. Hi, James. I am so happy to be able to chat with you today. I attended your workshop just 2 days back and had an amazing experience. And I'm so happy that I can also bring some of your work to our community now by just talking to you. So welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure, an honor, and I'm glad you enjoyed the workshop.
Yeah, thank you. I have a small request for you. Mm-hmm. So before we begin, can you lead us with a small, maybe grounding practice of a couple of seconds so that before we get into it and also when our audience is listening, they can follow through. So maybe just a couple of seconds of breath work or any grounding practice that you usually do.
So there's something called a physiological sigh, which is the most effective type of breath work across all different metrics for relaxation. Basically it involves this. What you do is you breathe in through your nose as much as possible. And at the top, you take another one. So sip, and then you breathe out with the H sound, you know, like all the way out. I mean, we'll do this in a couple of seconds. Why this is very effective is two reasons. When you breathe in up to the top, then you, that extra sip expands your lungs a lot more. Mm-hmm. And breathing out through your, with this H sounds, means that you have to use your diaphragm to exhale. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people confuse breath work where they're trying to, and although this is the case in what we did a couple of days ago, when you're breathing, they're concentrating on the inhale. Mm-hmm. And then actually in relaxation and in yoga practices, it's all about the exhale and using the abdomen to exhale. Right. So we're going to do it three times like this. Ready? Okay. We go breathe in through the nose. At the top of the next one. And then. And again. Next one. Then. And so this type of breathwork is the most effective breathwork, at least it's been clinically studied.
Okay.
It's more effective to engage in 2 minutes of this than it is to engage in any type of meditation or visualization. Obviously, before you start a visualization practice or grounding practice or any of these kind of practices, I don't like the word should, but I advise that you engage in something to ground you. I mean, once you've done that, then you can have, there's all sorts of grounding exercises, which are also very effective, imagination, visualization, feelings, and light, these different things.
Right.
But the easiest way to set yourself into, let's say, a more serene or relaxed state is by using this. So this physiological sigh is actually something we do during our sleep. The body naturally does it to adjust. And why you do that is because you have this extra sip when you're breathing, because sometimes your alveoli or these sacs just at the end of your breath system, respiratory system, they close. And so our body naturally does this to give it that extra push, to pop them open so you maximize your oxygen intake. Taking advantage, like in most things, you're taking advantage of biological mechanisms that already exist.
Right.
You're just doing it consciously. In almost everything. It's either, you're either working with your mind or your body, but you're taking advantage of some sort of mechanism.
In getting, Yeah, that was good. That actually felt nice. And
Yeah.
yeah, I think like you said, we usually focus, I at least focus a lot more on my inhales when I breathe deeply, but a lot less on my exhales. And yeah, like when you take a deeper exhale, I think it's very different to actually follow.
Very true. Basically, the mechanism works like this. The longer you breathe out, the longer the exhale, the more relaxed you'll feel. The longer the inhale, the more excited you'll feel. And so if you're using like if you're doing some sort of practice which is involving building up your nervous system, getting excited, then you'll find that the inhales are longer. If you're doing something where you're trying to calm your nervous system down, trying to resist something like ice bath, both ice baths and saunas, which I do a lot of work with, involves long, slow exhales. I'm just taking advantage of this mechanism and the nervous
Yeah, I
system.
think that's such a nice tip that your inhales can be longer for a more exciting or, you know, when you're getting into something, and then exhales for a more peaceful and grounding way
Exactly.
of going. Amazing. And I know you've done a lot of different work. So you've been a teacher, you are a musician, you have worked as a communication facilitator, languages. So how did you transition into this journey of wellness, into holistic healing practices and growth? I think that's very interesting, and I would love to know a little background of
Sure.
yours.
So I'm from Ireland. And Irish people are great, and we have many wonderful characteristics. I honestly believe some of the best people to have a conversation with are Irish people. We also have a couple of characteristics that are well known for, which is, for example, drinking. We're funny, you know, we're stoic. So there's a lot of cultural reasons for that: English colonialism, Catholic Church, and things like that. When I was younger, I was quite invertido, which would be like, I was spent a lot of time by myself. I read a lot of books. I was very involved in the mind. I was in philosophy, psychology. 14, 15, you know, I was introduced to the world of alcohol, or rather, it was introduced to me. And I took to it very well. So I drank a lot, and I had a lot of fun. But at a certain point, I had many kind of accidents and incidents because I would just not stop drinking. And then at the age of 22 or 23, I was living in Taiwan. I was a kindergarten teacher. And I was completely hungover, and the time had clearly come that this was impacting my life in a way that didn't make any sense. And I was in a cafe, hungover, and some guy was reading a book on NLP. I'd never heard of NLP, and I was quite desperate at this point, which is usually when change comes. And he said, I said, "What's that?" And he goes, "NLP. What is it about the mind?" He said, "I was like, well, can you change my mind? Because I need some help, bro." And he's like, "Actually, yeah, maybe." And he led me through what I now understand is future sourcing and future pacing, which is a specific type of visualization, where he took me into two potential futures. One in which I'm in my body of my that current version of myself, having continued drinking for like 60 years. I'm 7 years old, 8 years old, feeling my body, looking back on my past, on regrets, on injuries, and all the things that have happened. And then an alternative version where I was having quit drinking and look back on my life, a life of satisfaction, of challenge, of overcoming, of being healthy, of helping people. And I stopped drinking. After that day, I took 30 days of drinking, and then I stopped. From there, kept suffering, which is a big part of it. You know, trying to understand who I am, what I'm about. I only understood myself socially and emotionally, even sexually, through alcohol. And so I took up yoga, which was very strange for a non-Irish man 17 years ago. Partially because there was a load of hot girls, to be quite honest. I was going into the gym, and I was like, looking at the gym and all like that. I was like, that's nice, and I can hear some. The girl, right? Look at you. Yeah. Well, look at you. Look right, and you go. And you look left, and you go, this is... and I went into the yoga class. And I remember because I used to play rugby, I had no flexibility whatsoever. And the teacher was stunned at my lack of flexibility. And they taught me how to stretch, how to move, how to relax, how to calm down. At this point, I had already had a vocal polyp. You know what a vocal polyp is? It's where basically you're abusing your vocal cords because you don't know
A
how to
lot,
use them. I
yeah.
was drinking, smoking, I was singing in a rock
Right,
band. Huh?
yeah.
So they had removed vocal polyp. When you remove a vocal polyp with a laser, you can't speak for 3 weeks.
Oh.
So the first, this is before this trend, but it was leading up to it. Couldn't
Okay.
speak for 3 weeks. That was very interesting. And
Yeah.
also I was given vocal rehabilitation training. Vocal rehabilitation training involves using your abdomen and breath work to sing properly, to use your voice properly without damaging your vocal cords.
Right.
And that was the first time that I was learned that when you breathe out slowly, it
You're
relaxes
going
you.
to.
So these two things, or these two or three instances, kind of led me down a path of, I was always very curious, but more mental curiosity, you know, reading books, exploring. And this led me down this path of, wow, so I can use my mind to shift realities and change my motivations. I can use my breath to calm myself down. And from then on, I've just been exploring all those things.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think it's such a beautiful way where a lot of people, I think, who are practicing maybe something in the wellness space or health come from their own experience. And it's been the same for me also. And I think, like you said, at a point when you really get desperate and you know that you need to change something, for me, it was related to food. And I knew if I continued down the choices I was making, the way I was using my body, I didn't see a very bright future when I looked a couple of years into it. That's when I made the change to, look at food mindset and how I was truly practicing self-care and nourishing myself. And of course, it's always a work in progress. But yeah, I think I resonate with so many things on how the change takes place and how you came into this.
So it's the point that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. It's called in therapy threshold point. And threshold point is, in order for change to take place, three factors have to be in place. One, you know something has to change. Two, you know that it has to change now. Three, you know that that something is you or me, or in that case, right? And often that requires self-disgust, you know, like a lot of self-hatred, like these emotions. That will come onto this, but it's a big part of my work now is embracing your emotions, accepting them to whatever level you can deal with them and heal them and remove these traumas, but also using these emotions as a fuel, as a motivation to drive
To
you to
get
do the
through.
difficult things that you have to do. Because ignoring them and suppressing them, you might mention it, have a whole bunch of physiological repercussions, but even on a very basic level of, you won't do shit if you're just ignoring, oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yeah, you're kind of just pushing it down with maybe medications or substances or other routines and ways to deal with it.
And yeah, and this is something we might touch on again. It's something I've explored in myself, in my own experience. Oftentimes, some of the wellness practices, everything has its place, but a lot of times with a lot of wellness practices, and I found this myself, you are kind of using some sort of, it's like using a balm, you know? You have a wound that's been caused by so, or you have a, imagine you have a knee pain, right? And your knee pain comes because you got a structural problem with the way you're moving. It might be tied to a whole lot of emotional, it may be tied to your sleep patterns and everything. Instead of actually like allowing yourself to feel that pain and admitting it, you start to go on to, you know, some sort of painkillers. These painkillers, they cover the symptoms, and more importantly, they remove the motivation for you to deal with the underlying issue. So many things that are in this life and this world we live in are like that, you know. Facebook if you're lonely, Pornhub if your sexual life is a mess, all these different things that we
To
use
cover,
to cover it up, and it covers it up, but it also just keeps chipping away at the energy that you need to address the underlying issues.
Yeah, for sure. So I think since we're touching on that, the work that you're doing has a lot of transformational and growth healing modalities right now. Like you said, NLP, hypnotherapy, the bioacoustic massage. So for people who are new to this space or may not have heard of these things, how would you introduce maybe the foundation of the work that you're doing?
Wow, okay. So I'm going to start with emotion because I think that's somewhere that most people can relate to. So in my case, I had two bases really covered. My mental faculty, I developed at a very young age, reading and doing these kind of things. And it's very important. You have to develop your mind. You have to bring rational decisions. Physically, I was doing great with yoga and working out and all these kind of things. And yet there was still something missing from that. Play a lot of music and I dance. And these things have been great ways for me to express myself, to express joy, to liberate myself from these emotions. But over time, I've become more convinced of the role of emotions. Your emotional world are signals. And these signals, if you don't pay attention to them, they get stuck in places. They end up causing certain behaviors. So, for example, if you're overeating and you try to use your rational mind to say, oh, I'm gonna I know it's bad, and I'm going to eat this tomorrow, and I'm going to go here, here, and here, and here. And you fail. And you fail because you're not addressing, I mean, 95% of people fail, right? Myself included, because you're not addressing the underlying emotional issue, which is often some sort of trauma or some sort of thing that happened in your childhood, which has led to a protective behavior. So you need to address that underlying issue. And the work that I'm doing at the moment is a really amazing mix, to be quite honest. I'm fascinated. I find myself very amazed to be doing it. And there's four elements in, for example, in the bioacoustic massage. It's a breath work, circular breathing, combined with immersive sound, combined with hypnotic language, and then combined with deep fascial massage. And the fundamental idea is we have a big emotional world lying just below our conscious reach. And we often we don't and can't accept it, we don't want to accept it, we're conditioned to not accept it, to move forward with that. This particular system that I'm working with at the moment, with this circular breathing, it changes the flow of your blood. Changes the flow of your blood through a variety of mechanisms, which are quite complex. And it basically changes the flow, blood flow to your frontal cortex, which means that you shut off your monkey mind or your rational thought, right? You enter a different state of consciousness. The soundscape that you're listening to are different types of frequencies, solfeggio frequencies, isotonic tunes, which set your mind into a different state and also drive your emotions. I think you might have noticed as well, like just some of it's calm and relaxing, and then there's like boom, 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 bam, bam. And you're like, ooh, these emotions come up with
Yeah, it
that.
was a very different way when you went through it.
Exactly. It's an emotional journey, right? That's what that sort of soundtrack to a movie is. It's an emotional journey. At the same time, then I'm guiding you live through this microphone, and that involves A, motivating you to keep breathing, to keep pushing through these walls, and B, you're using what I call hypnotic language because it's how you frame what the journey is, that person is on, right? So I'll give a few examples. It's an extremely complex field, but you're framing it A, as you're not creating a new you, you're revealing a you that's already there. Right? It's not that, hey, I'm going to change myself. No. You're taking away these bits, and this is actually who your nature is, but you've got lost. Or I might say, for example, in the hypnosis, I want you to find the part of you that feels most comfortable. Instead of telling you your shoulder is comfortable, because if I say to you your shoulder is comfortable, our natural reaction is to negate this. It's like, you don't tell me what. No, it's not. No. If I say, I wonder which part of you is most comfortable? I wonder means that I'm not telling you anything. You naturally do
You're
a
figuring
test.
it out.
You're figuring it out. And which part of you naturally do a scan, and you will find a part of your body that's comfortable. And by default, then that's the most comfortable. And so already you've kind of drawn the attention without this kind of conscious pushback. And that's built into it. But a lot of it's just breathe, breathe, breathe. Come on, push through it
Pushing,
because we don't want to, because it's uncomfortable. And then finally, it's this deep fascial massage, which I apply in some workshops. And that's fundamentally something I was working with a guy called Mario from Body Awakening. It's a type of massage where you press into the deep tissue where some of these emotions are stored, and you release that. It can be quite painful at first, but then there's this emotional release, which kind of ripples up through the body and then it's expressed. And so all of these factors are combined to provide a very intense experience. And it's important that it's framed, the responsibility is framed in terms of it's your journey, it's your effort. No one can make you breathe, no one can make you accept, no one can make you surrender, no one can make you release. That's your job. And I highly advise you to take that. And so there's a lot going on in this, and I'm sure, did you feel tired yesterday
I
afterwards?
did. Actually, when I woke up, I felt a bit tired. And then through the day, I did have waves of, feeling a bit more fatigued. And like you said, it's probably because there's so much more processing that's happening. And
Well,
there's a
there's
difference.
processing and there's emotional release, and it's like a detox, you know? I mean, I remember I was in a Vipassana meditation retreat, and I 3 years ago or something, and on day seven I started getting heart palpitations and all this weird stuff, and I couldn't figure out what it was, and I realized it was caffeine withdrawal, right? Caffeine withdrawal was the worst. And when you're processing emotions and you're detoxing your emotions, like if you think you're tired after you do this, imagine, like I and let's say people I work with, we absorb this, you know? It does. I was working with Nikhil, who was here the other day. And the following day, that evening, he was also facilitating a workshop with me. and we were doing this
You're
work,
going through.
physical work, you know. And that next day, Nikhil was like, "I am exhausted. I'm exhausted." And like, yeah, because when you're releasing, where is it going? It's like an exorcism. You're
Your take.
absorbing it, you
Yeah,
know.
that was actually going to be one of my questions, that when you are working with people and you see them going through this change, how are you emotionally processing it? Because it must be a lot for you to be taking in, right, all the time.
So there, I've done hypnotherapy sessions where they've been a like I once had two people in a row who you know, in their memories, they came up with, you know, abuse from their parents, fundamentally, no? And that's intense, especially if the person isn't fully aware of it and you're sitting there. Two things that I've learned over time is, one, there's a mental reframe that is core to the actual work that I do. Is that sadness, pain, and anger, and the expression of these emotions is not bad. Like, that's why I'm here. It's why we're having this, why we're doing this process. So when that's happening, you do have to step back a little bit from it and understand that as the therapeutic, as a success. And it's something you're trying to explain to people as well. When they're, I do a hypnotherapy and they break down, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." It's like, "Oh, bro, I'm delighted." I mean, I'm not delighted in that
But
sense,
it's,
but
yeah,
it's
part of the
fulfilling. It's
thing.
part of the process, and this is what I want for you. This is what I want. This is how you go from here to here. You can't go, you can't move on sustainably in a coherent and meaningful way without accepting who the things that have happened to you, how they made you feel emotionally, and how that contributed to the current version of yourself. Something one is that mental reframe. And two, resilience. I think you have to accept that life is hard. You have to accept that people have fucked up experiences. You have to accept that, like, and you have to lean into that. You have to lean into the discomfort of building your business, of having those difficult conversations with your parents, with your boyfriend, with your girlfriend, with your dog, whatever it is. You have to lean into that. And the more you lean into that, the stronger you get. I mean, the more stress you get as well, but the stronger you get, and the capacity to handle emotions like that just develops, you know. Still exhausted, but
I'm
meaningful,
sure.
really meaningful. You know, it really means a lot to me. It means a lot. Like, before we did the workshop with Keel, the second workshop, where he had a lot of his close friends and he'd all gathered for this. Like, it really is an honor. It really is. Like, I was and I get emotional now, which is great. You know why I do this work? Is because I need to feel. I want to feel, and I get to feel through other people and understanding humanity. And so, me is.
Exhausting but fulfilling
Yeah,
is a
exhausting
way
but
to put
fulfilling.
it.
That's life, you know. That really is kind of life. A lot of the modalities we look for is everyone's looking to kind of, "What do you want?" "Oh, I just want to feel centered and peaceful and one with the universe." And like,
It's gonna be a ride.
it's gonna be a ride. I mean, you might get there, you know, but you won't get there being peaceful all the way through. You're gonna
Of
get there
course.
recognizing your shit, recognizing your mistakes, recognizing other people's shit. And like suffering through it, but suffering in a meaningful way. So at least I'm going to suffer anyway. So if I don't help people, if I don't do this, I'm going to suffer. I'm going to suffer worse because I'm going to feel like, "Oh, you're not doing anything. It's all just you." And I am an ego monster. We're all ego monsters. I have been. So that's also why I do it, because otherwise it's literally just going to be me thinking about myself all the time. And that's the road to depression, straight up, right?
No, but I think it's a beautiful purpose of the experience that you get and the fact that you want to help people feel this. And I think now it's been scientifically proven for so long that we store our emotions and stories and traumas, past experiences in our body. So through these experiences, or even through what you know of, how do these usually show up, maybe as like what are the physical or mental symptoms if someone is experiencing? They may know that, okay, I have a lot stored, I've not been processing or releasing or getting in tune. Are there any specific physical, mental
Look,
symptoms you see?
any time you have something like a habit or a thought process or a pattern that you don't want anymore, and you've taken steps, like you've changed your environment. So the first thing I would recommend is, okay, it might just be environmental. You know, if you're around the wrong people, if you're doing the wrong job, this might just be like, you know, you're in an
That's
office all
really
day long
important.
and you're like, your boss is a dickhead, and you've got passive aggressive stuff going on, and you've set your boundaries, first of all, it's really important, and you're still like, "Oh, I'm
Thanks.
still eating crap and doing this." Okay, first thing, as a conscious person, put yourself in an environment where you can check, Because behavior is a function of a person in the environment, right?
Right.
So check, you can
Change the
firstly change the
environment.
environment, check how's your behavior.
Yeah.
Secondly, if that doesn't work, then it's you know? And if it's you, it's almost everything as far, and this is my opinion, but I feel it's all, most of it is tied to some emotional thing because your emotional system is the system that drives your decision making.
Right.
It's not your rational mind, right?
Yeah.
We try to deal with this by watching TikTok videos and reading books and trying to deal with this on a superficial level as if this rational critical faculty actually has the capacity to change this emotional world. And it does, but it requires a lot of work and actually allowing yourself to heal. Secondly, like, this is why I think your work is important as well in terms of food, you know? Why I generally, I'm not taking great care of myself this last couple of months because I've been like boom, boom, boom,
You've
now.
been, yeah,
In India,
traveling is
traveling.
not easy, eh? But yeah, you can sort of, I think, come and figure it out, which takes very long, even for me right now. But I do feel that sometimes I can come back to those very small routines and very small, I think, rituals that kind of bring me back into balance, even if it's not, following a complete thing, because I realized over my health that rigidity and moving one particular way of the spectrum never gonna work.
And this is something we'll touch on again. So then you say, right, okay, it's not my environment. Okay, I'll get in shape, I'll eat nice food, I'll have nice friends. And this is all looped. There's no like one, this
One,
iterative process, but then you find, okay, look, I'm in good shape. I'm eating well. I'm sleeping. I'm trying my best to have good relationships, but I'm still doing this thing. No, that's why I like to be in good shape. That's why I think everyone should. I don't like the word. When you eat well, when you're sleeping well, and when you're taking care of your body, if you still have like, I mean, it's naturally you're going to suffer, but if you still have some severe symptoms of something like chronic migraine, or you're still just bursting out in tears, or you're having flashbacks, then that's an emotional, it's almost certainly an emotional thing that you haven't processed yet. And it's very hard to find space, to find a competent person who you trust, who gives you space, who's not necessarily in your emotional world, because that's always flavored by that. Therapist, and you go to a therapist, and for my opinion, oftentimes with talk therapy, all you're doing is you're hammering this story, this is your story, this is your story, this is your story, and you're creating a victimhood and a narrative in their head that, of course, I'm like this. Because my dad was like this, and no, 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 no. But unless you go back and feel it, release it, and then reframe it, it's very tricky. It's very tricky. It's quite fascinating as well.
But I think right now what you said, like you feel it and then you reassess and then you release it. That's
You feel it. You have to feel it, and in a way, as you feel it, you're going. If you really feel it, you're going to release it to a degree. Now, if you really feel sad, you'll see it in his workshops,
You'll
to
see,
different degrees. You can see they're at least acknowledging it, right? So they'll release some of it, and then at least they become aware of it. They're like, oh, this is a real
What
thing,
is,
okay? Either I need to explore it more and release more of my emotions, which we all do, but also it's a narrative that I'm telling myself. It's a narrative created by my emotional past and my history because of my dad did this to me, and it's like small things, these things happened, and these memories have created a narrative and a story of yourself and who you are. And that story is your unconscious story of yourself is defining your actions. I'm not worth it, I'm not good enough, I'm different, I want things that are not accessible
So
to
it's
me.
kind of your own narrative that you've been building through all these past stories and experiences. And then how can you feel what you're feeling and what you have been storing so that you can kind of also change the narrative and change your energy and the way you show up then?
Exactly. So, for example, if you do rapid transformational therapy, which is sort of a form of regression, then you'll have that person. Your beautiful mind is moving back to a critical point where this behavior was formed. Take it back, and they come back and they see a place where they explain where you were there, where they are, what's happening. You talk to them about how they feel, why they feel that way. Another memory, another memory. And at a certain point, you'll have them hold these memories. Okay, take these memories in your left hand. Now hold this story. Now hold your current version of yourself and the narrative you're telling yourself. Where's the connection between these two things? And once you have them holding these emotional ideas and this current idea of themselves, then they say, ah, okay, I'm not, and you're not creating these memories. You're not saying, you're guiding them, saying, these are memories you've come up with. This is that your understanding of yourself, hold them up. And then it's more like a curiosity, right? It's like, oh, what? Oh,
That
and
is
you're
my
like,
experience.
yeah, it's really obvious now, isn't it? You know, but they have to realize it. And they're often obvious, even after like this kind of breath work, you'll have these epiphanies. These epiphanies, it's not like you've suddenly figured out the great complex game. It's like something that's really fucking obvious that if there wasn't an emotional block attached to it, you would have noticed a long time ago. It's like, oh, because my brother's like this and that made me like that. Yeah, everyone else will probably be able to figure that out, except
Yeah, but
me.
you need that to be able to open the cap and then kind of
To
like let it
let
all,
it go. Yeah, and assess where you are with shit, you know? Because like, where am I? Where am I really? You know, what's in my bag? How can I dispel some of this? How can I use this as fuel? How can I take this emotional reality to understand where I am? And how can I use that to move forward in a way that's like beneficial to me and to other people?
Yeah, I think that's so profound, but it's actually yet so practical and so necessary to be able to cultivate. And like you said, keep striving and moving forward so that your choices are aligning with the outcomes you actually desire in life. Because you can make choices that are not aligning, and then you can keep saying that, but I wanted that and this is not happening. So
So there's a, yeah, it's a good point. It reminds me of something I read, not sure when, and I've been thinking about it a lot. So what, you know, people say you have to know what you want, right? There's another version of that is like, what do you want to want? You know, you want like, you know, we all want, I want a hot girlfriend, I want a big house, I don't want everyone like this, and I want all these things, you know? But what would I want to want if I could choose my wants? What would I want? I would like to be more compassionate. I would want to be searching for compassion and meaning. I would want to be delivering service. I would want to be you know, willing to have difficult conversations for the greater good of humanity. That's what I would want. What I want at the moment is still mixed up with my own ego and my own. I want to show this guy and I want to show this. And, you know, that's what I
So
realistically.
there's a layer to that also.
There's a
What do you
huge
want
layer to
to?
that, and it's fine. And this is something I've come like a lot of my of this journey over the last year in particular. So basically, I turned 38 and I realized I'm 30, 39 a bit now. When I hit 38, I realized, you know, fuck, this is it. Like, I am now at the age, in some senses, but I already have already acquired all the tools and all the knowledge and all the experiences, and I've done it, it's done. If I'm going to ever do anything, this is it. I'm like at peak,
Yeah,
you
this
know,
is where you
mental,
want to
emotional.
translate it now
Yeah.
and bring it to.
And then when you do that, people fuck you over. They do. That's just the way it is. Like, you know, and you fuck people over, I'm sure, to a degree. But when you're on the ascendancy, when you're pushing, when you're trying something new, people will grab on. And as soon as they think that it's not worth it anymore, they know actually they're just it's just literally like using you for to a certain degree. And that's what we do. We all use each other. And then when they inevitably stab you in the back in some degree, and we've all been stabbed in the back. When they do that, you can either crumple to the ground and give up, or you can take that stab in the back or whatever emotional, that anger or
That comes up.
the frustration. But, all right, you know, for a short-term fuel, I'll take this. I'm going to show this guy who stole my business idea or this girl who didn't believe me or whatever it is that I can do it.
Use that. Yeah, that's
Use it. It's
fuel.
fine. That's, in my opinion, long term, you'd hope to translate that into, you know, once you kind of let reach, like break out of the orbit of that world. Then you can reevaluate and say, okay, I want to use only good positive values and I want to blah, 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 blah. But we're not there.
I think you always need that momentum, like you said, to like be able to move to that next step, or kind of also give you a push in knowing that, okay, I anyway wanted to do this, but this has given me the push. So you're not doing something that you don't want to, but like moving more
Sure.
towards.
Yeah, this is very, I think I was listening to a podcast on modern wisdom and he made a very good point, which is you want to make sure that you're still playing your game. You don't want to change your game to show somebody else that, you know. So imagine like, so now my game, if you want to call it my game, is this healing modality. And one of the reasons I do it is because I like to have intimate, interesting conversations. That's probably the biggest part for me. My frustration came from like, how are you? What did you do yesterday? Did you see the football game? And that's why I became introverted, right? And so I found through this, you go straight to the meat. You know, you're in there talking to people, there's trust, there's openness, and genuinely want to help them. Like it's a genuine thing. And so there's no filter then.
Yeah,
It's
there's
like
no, yeah.
your healing depends on your capacity to feel.
Yeah.
My ability to help you depends on your capacity to express truthfully what it is you're feeling. And I won't judge you as far as I can. I will not judge you because it doesn't make any
Yeah.
sense. That's just your life, you know? But my game is healing, right? Let's say I'm doing a business with a yoga teacher, right? And I'm doing the healing and he's doing the stretching, right? But at a certain point, maybe he screws me over. Maybe he takes some money or he
Yeah.
talks bad about me, whatever, and we part ways. And I go, I can A, say, I'm going to be the best fucking yoga teacher. I'm going to steal all his clients. And then
Yeah.
at that point, he's won already. He's like, well, you
Yeah.
did that because of me.
Yeah.
Or you just take that anger and that frustration and channel it in a way to
Yeah.
move forward. I'm going to stick to my game, but I'm going to become so successful and do it so competently and
Yeah.
so meaningfully that he's going to rue the day that
Yeah.
he ever sent me
Yeah,
back.
you
And you might
still
say this
use it as like
childish.
good fuel, not as, yeah.
Not as, and it's like, okay, I think that's
Yeah.
important. That's part of his work as well. When you go in deep into your sadness and your grief and your anger and your frustration, you're never going to be Buddha. You're never going to clear all of that out.
Yeah.
And so we are humans, we are
You're
animals,
going to
we
have
are
to.
competitive, there is hierarchy, there is status, we want respect, we don't like to be disrespected, we all want all these things. And so be realistic about
Yeah.
how far you can go with these things
Yeah.
and use them.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice analogy that we've spoken about. The brand that I'm trying to bring forth is also about cultivating body intelligence, because I feel this is a very important factor when you're trying to make some choices in a world where there's so much confusion and you don't listen to your own body. And of course, it's something you need to cultivate when you start getting more in tune with it. Is there any exercise or any routine, anything that you would say can help people get in tune with their body? Something that they can maybe even access at home or
Well,
do.
yeah, I'm gonna make first I want to talk about mind, food and mindset,
Yes.
right? I find this fascinating. I'm obsessed. Yeah, I'm obsessed with mindset. And the only thing, mindset, the definition of mindset is a set of assumptions that you have around a particular field. Right? That's what mindset is. Mindset affects three things. It affects your expectations, your explanations, and your motives, right? So your particular belief system about your friends or your physiology or exercise will define, first of all, what you pay attention to, what's salient to you. So literally what you believe in something is what you're going to receive.
Yeah.
So if you believe that, let's say with exercise, that a carnivore diet causes whatever it comes,
Inflammation, whatever.
inflammation, all these
Yeah.
kind of things. Every time you see on the news that you're just going to see that, you're going to ignore all the counter evidence,
Yeah.
right? And so understanding your mindset is important because then you can understand how you explain what happens to you. Oh, I'm sick now. That's because I didn't eat the carrot juice, huh? And then the next time you don't drink carrot juice, your expectation changes because then you expect to get sick and then you get sick. And then your motivation changes because then, okay, I'm more motivated to have carrot juice, for example.
Then.
And there's a fascinating set of experiments by a lady called Alia Crum. I don't know if you've heard about her. She's from Yale. She's not well published in the
Okay.
popular
Yeah.
world of what she
Yeah.
work is like
Really.
astonishing. What she takes a variety of different experiments. One she does is one called the milkshake test.
Okay.
You take a milkshake and it's a 300 calories milkshake.
Is this with the placebo where there's it's given to one group, which
It's
is
given to, it's not exactly a placebo, but it's very, very similar,
yeah.
right? And so one of the milkshakes is a calorie dense milkshake of 1,000 or
Yeah.
1,000. Another one is calories 100, right? And they're told that it's all 300 or 500 something that they all drink. One group is told that this is a
Terry
healthy,
Evans, yeah.
and one is told that it's extremely unhealthy and full of calories,
Yeah.
right? So the ones that believe that they're drinking a healthy drink, they store more fat in their body. The body decided, okay, there's less nutrients in this, and so I'm not going to burn it away. When you believe that what you're drinking is full of dense calories, then your body will actually burn more of that. Now, this has a lot of implications for your mindset in regards to when you're eating consciously, which I think is important. I've seen this somewhere related to what you do, is that you want to not view this process of eating as a process of deprivation.
Yeah.
If you approach this as I am somehow depriving myself of the things I need in order to be healthy, your body will react by actually treating like that. You won't be able
Yeah.
to lose weight.
Yeah.
I'm always dieting, but I don't lose weight. I used to be like, you're just fat and you're lean.
Yeah.
No, it's like it's related to your
You
mindset,
start.
it's related to stress. When you're eating, ideally, you want to be focused on how nutrient dense and interesting and nutritious the
Yeah.
food that you're eating is,
Yeah.
because that will create this loop of
Yeah.
essentially
Right.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay, you think it's healthy? It's healthy, and it's going to provide you, and your body's going to burn it. It's going to use it in a more sufficient way.
Yeah.
If you think you're depriving yourself, you're going to get fat,
Yeah,
and you're going to be tired, and you're not going to actually burn the energy that you need to perform at a high level.
Yeah.
So, but one thing that is really interesting, you can check out her work on stress, on exercise.
Yeah.
Fascinating. It's a little bit outside of this topic. The one thing I will say is that your relationship to stress, if you believe stress is good for you, stress is good for you. If you believe stress is bad for you, stress is bad for you. Right? So
in your mindset.
It's in your mind. Yeah. If you believe it's stress, if you believe that allows you to mobilize your resources, to act more cleverly, to focus more and be more resilient, then it'll do that. If you believe that it affects you negatively, that it compromises your ability to
manage
your nervous system, that's it. I just think it really improved.
It is. And honestly, I realized, I think, maybe 2 to 3 years ago, how much your perception on these matters. But now I also find myself that when I'm sitting with a group of people or even at home and someone keeps having a perception or a negative perception around something, it just bothers me. I can't, because I know that, okay, this is kind of getting into my energy also.
Mm.
It's something that's not serving them. And you can't do anything about it because you can't tell someone how to think or what to do. But I think when you are more aware, you also kind of get more, I think, less tolerant of other things.
This is a huge topic. Some very things to say. I was actually talking to a friend of mine, Pan Budella, who's running some more chess about this yesterday. So, for example, when you're in India, right, there's a culture of hospitality.
Mm.
And this culture of hospitality is great in some ways, but it has its negative sides as well, right? Because we go to dinner, you go to your auntie's house, right? Like she cooks you a meal. And whatever she's cooking, whatever it aligns with your diet or whatever, if you don't fucking eat whatever some culture gives you, if you don't go, yummy, and dessert, you have to eat that.
You have to, yeah.
And it can be very frustrating, particularly when it's in a family situation or it's your own culture.
Right.
Your own culture is going to annoy you much more.
Yeah.
When I traveled to India and Rasmani, I went, how do you feel about Indian hospitality? Amazing, isn't it? Yeah, it's amazing. What about when people are pushing things on you and telling you after this and this? I'm like, it's great. So what, does it not bother you? I'm like, how's it going to bother me? It's just that I am getting to observe and understand so much about these roles and these ideas, these cultural values through this. As long as I don't take it personally.
Yeah.
Then I go, look. You know, to understand the position of this person, to understand more and more and more, to understand and go, oh, wow. And like, that's like to not take things personally. I'm sure that's in a book somewhere, Hemingway, it's the fourth commandments or four rules of life or something like that.
And,
but to not take it personally.
Yeah.
What we do when we talk about games out there, you know, you don't want to play somebody else's game at the expense of your own game to prove a point.
Yeah.
Right. And this capacity alone is the fundamental capacity of being happy alone. Because when that person is talking shit, in the European media talking shit, and because you believe they're talking shit, they are talking shit, your capacity to like literally not care about it, to understand where it comes from, to not take it personally, to feel this person, where they're coming from, and to negate to play the game that they want you to play.
Yeah.
It's literally in improv theater, it's called punking the game, right?
Okay.
Punking the game is if you're doing an improv theater,
the
only rule is that you always have to continue on from it. You know,
say
yes and. And the only rule is you can't say I'm not playing a game.
Yeah.
Because you're here to play a game, right?
Yeah.
And this person, whoever it is saying things that are annoying you, you just don't know anything like that. You find such satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, yeah, you're right. Not probably, yeah, totally agree with you. It's a very good argument. Very,
yeah.
I like the way you put that. Yeah, but then you go, no, it's really good. I mean, it's clever, foot crafted,
and
reservations. So,
that's it, so much patience that you did that in the poker face.
It's because there's a satisfaction in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a delayed gratification.
Yeah.
You know, there's, and we're going to move on, but I'll come back. It's just very interesting. So, for example, when you have a talent, in a lot of podcasts, so I'm talking about myself all the time, right? Mm. And when even talent or experience or something, you know, someone brings up something, like you studied in Holland, right?
Yeah.
You've been in Holland, your relation there, so you know, when someone brings up Holland,
right,
the national tendency is they jump in and go, I live in Holland. Almost everybody does it, right?
Yeah.
But your capacity to delay that, to not have that need to engage in that level, one, it means the conversation might go a different way. And two, when it actually comes out, and it inevitably will, that you live in Holland, but you let them all talk about Holland, somebody who didn't know anything about it, and then you, and then some moment will come where you just have the most self indulgent moment. You see, well, she lives in Holland, so she hasn't worked out yet.
Oh, really?
Hell
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's very satisfying. Delayed gratification.
I'm going to try this out. Start like processing it in a little different way.
Because it makes you more interesting.
Yeah.
And what makes you the most interesting is your capacity to not need to prove yourself at every conversation. I'm sure you've had this where you're having a conversation with somebody, and depending on whatever the relative status are, whether they want to invest you or, you know, I'm a foreigner and I'm a white man in India.
Yeah.
So there's much more of a tendency for people to find them here right there than if I'm just in home in Ireland or whatever. And the ones that I understand it, I don't have a problem with it, but the ones who I enjoy the company most of are the ones who are like, don't say anything. And unless they talk and they make points, but they're not trying to prove, by the way, I'm a fucking billionaire.
Yeah.
By the way, I have this card on them. By now, that comes out eventually, and you know it.
Yeah.
You know from their self-restraint.
How
they are, what they have. They're like, oh, you're deaf for being Irish dude.
Yeah.
Same, you know what I mean? The same when you resist all these things. That's a sign of character.
Right.
Come back to earlier point. I do a lot of fasts.
Yeah.
A lot of fasts.
Okay.
I need like a fast every 3 months or something. And 3 day fast, which is water. I do intermittent fasting.
Okay.
Physiologically, fasting is a lot more complicated for women. And women just have physiologically, things are more complicated in general.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's more things can go wrong.
Right.
Complications, more sensitivity, more hormones existing.
With fasting, especially,
For fasting, right? So I'm not saying women shouldn't be fasting, but it's an interesting process.
Yeah.
Same with ice baths, you know? Women, in terms of ice baths, they have a lot more going on. These cycles, you know? Like, I can't do that. And
I'm so interested in that, though. I know I want to prep myself to try it once.
You know that I do that. That's...
I do. I know. And actually, before I even went to Netherlands, my dad had told me about Wim Hof, because he started practicing it during COVID. Like, he thought it improved his breathing and, you know, kind of immunity a lot. So then we were practicing it for a bit. But yeah, I know he's known as the Iceman, and been very interested in trying this out, because now it's all...
Menu.
Age reversal, things like that, health.
So it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. That's why I got into it. I do all the things I do. It's intense, you know? I was just
thinking
into your body and there's physiological mechanisms you're going like this. So you're also in your mind, redefining the way you react to your sensations in your body, pushing your limit, building resilience. I mean, you know, the video, look. My business is half based on this, that people wanted the media and saying, when they talk about time and world of the Zen masters.
Yeah.
I saw you go.
Second.
Yeah, I saw you go. You know why? Well, okay, I get it. I'm making money off your fight.
Yeah.
So, fasting and ice bath, more complicated. The great thing about fasting, it has multiple different effects, you know, in terms of the wellness we won't go into, but it shows you how you use food to distract yourself. It shows you the emotional nature of food, because you're like, I'm bored. I can't have that. Are you hungry? No, I'm not hungry. But I'm just using it to shove my face because I have an emotional need to fill myself up with, you know?
Yeah.
And those fasts for 2 or 3 days rewire the way you relate to food, and also provides a really good base to start off a healthier habit. I'm not saying I succeeded all these days.
Yeah.
It's the most effective way that I know.
Yeah.
If you fast for 3 days.
Yeah.
You'll at least wait a week before you eat McDonald's.
Yeah.
No, I'm just like, look, I fucking fasted for 3 days. McDonald's can
take the gratification of the fast.
Exactly. So fasting for me is an intermittent fasting, particularly because it's a very straightforward, simple, easy to apply thing.
Yeah.
Have a coffee in the morning, don't have your lunch till 12 or 1. I think intermittent fasting is all for, depending on if you have psychological problems, but if you're extremely anxious, for example, then eating early in the morning can be a very good grounding thing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on. I'd say on average, for a man who's looking at how to lose weight, in how they be more aware.
Yeah.
Is to work out in the morning without eating. And Pimenta will say, but Zoe's free. And you're like, you know what Zoe's free? Is allowing your body to fall apart at an early age. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. It's hurting. It hurts me to see it and to feel it, and then to see that you can't even recognize
that it's actually a thing.
That it's actually happening.
You can.
Yeah, so I think fasting is there.
Yeah, I think that's, like you said, it has different ways of how people can react to it. But yeah, when you take a break, maybe from just mindlessly doing something, even with your food choices, it kind of will give your body a good base to, you know what is actually working for you and what is not. So I think that's a that's really good insight.
It's also would be, for example, if you look at like Italians and the French and these cultures, they have an incredibly calorie dense food.
Yeah.
Culture, whatever. And I mean, different than the South Italy, but given the calorie-rich nature of what they eat, you would assume that they would be a lot heavier. And the reason that they're not is because culturally they don't allow snacking. Mm-hmm. Snacking's not allowed. You're here now, yeah. And really in the States, people walk around, they're on the bus, they throw chips in the
car. Yeah, it's a very, snacking is a very big thing even in India.
Yeah, exactly.
All the time.
All the, and it makes, you know, there's reasons and all that, but like, if you don't snack, so you only eat three meals or two big meals or three meals a day. That's easy.
You're still doing.
You're going to lose all that weight because A, you're giving yourself a body a break so it can process. You're going to be much healthier because your body is always processing food all the time.
Yeah.
Has time to take a break. You look after the body.
Yeah.
And you eat more consciously. You tend to eat in company. You know, you appreciate these things. So you get so much more social connection. I'm terrible. I eat alone by myself. All the time. I like to be alone.
Yeah.
But I'm aware that when I eat with somebody else, there's a whole host
it's of things. It's a different. Yeah.
Eat more slowly. You engage. You have a social element.
Yeah.
And so then as well, is like having simple rules, like I won't eat alone, or at least I eat with somebody once a day.
Yeah.
I don't snack. Instead of snacking, just have way more lunchtime.
Yeah.
You don't eat too much.
You actually get, you actually eat till you're full or whatever, a little beyond. I mean, my mom, just yesterday, she was telling me that I don't know how people don't snack. That was a line because even when I'm full, I can eat after that and I can take snacking. And I said, yeah, but that's where you probably need to give it a try and see how it is to not be doing that always. But yeah, I think that's
It's also in a place like India where there's such intensity, you know, where the streets are bing, bing, bang, zoom, zoom, zoom. That is creating a level of stress where you want to do something. You know, your break is like a chai tea and a cigarette and a row. It's like, I'll take my break. That have a snack. Okay.
Yeah, it's the pace of work and just what they're doing in general.
Yeah, and it drags that little space. It's like why people smoke cigarettes. Yeah. It drags that space where, although you're not taking care of yourself, at least you're taking a moment for yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting perspective. Just a couple of rapid fire quick questions to end with. And so one of them is, what is the one thing you would want people to take back from your workshop, or the one thing you would want them to feel?
The one thing I would want them to feel? I would want them to feel. That's it. I want something.
Okay.
Feel something intensely.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. It might be bliss.
Yeah.
It might be pain. It might be suffering. But feel it. And this is the space to feel that.
Yeah. You know?
And that's what I want. I want them to feel it. If they can release it, even better.
Yeah.
Great. But I want them to take responsibility for this opportunity to feel deeper.
Mm.
And that's the thing. It's like, no one's going to feel it for you. But here are all the conditions. Take this chance to feel whatever shit, whatever glory, whatever it is, feel it. And it inevitably in the long run, that's perfectly.
I think that's beautiful. And for you, what would you say are the three words that describe wellness? Any three words.
Three words that describe wellness. You mean like the modern wellness business? Bullshit, bullshit, and bullshit. three words that describe wellness. Okay. I would say community.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning.
Okay. Almost there.
You know, almost there. Prep for this. And like, it's been wild of the three of me. Meaning and courage.
Okay.
So, why? Because fundamentally, you're without a community of people around you who have the social, the norms and the values to make it sustainable, you'll get wrong. It won't be sustainable. You don't have those people to make it meaningful, embedded into who you are, to encourage you, to drive you forward, to tell you when you're in bullshit, to tell you when you're not. It falls apart. You know, this is why these spaces exist. This is, we go and there are new norms here. When you're eating shit, someone will be like, maybe like, you should try my bread.
Yeah.
Remember, everyone, yeah. Come on, push it one more. Right. Number one, so find a community. Yeah. Number two, meaning. Like, you can put up with anything in life if you have a meaningful goal that you want to achieve. In fact, your health will align around that. So I'm about to cough when I was to say that. Your health will align around that. If you have something meaningful and that permanent view, you will find yourself not looking at all the details of your life and worrying about whether your class is right and wondering, have I got a thing to do this? Because we're just going to do whatever you have to do to pursue that goal.
Yeah.
And the last bit is courage, because in terms of wellness, you have to address a lot of deep dark shit about yourself to be congruent.
Mm.
It's not like,
yeah,
you're not well if you're ripped,
yeah,
but you're a bastard. You know, you're not well if you're selling snake oil to people.
Yeah.
If you're working in the wellness, a lot of people in the wellness industry are fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Not sneaky and horrible people that screw you over. They're the worst. The worst than the average person.
Yeah.
You're not well if you're proclaiming and this happened. Yeah. I think it's so deep.
Yeah.
I think the ego through investing is God has chosen me. That's not in this. I've had people say shit bang that for you. Especially in the,
yeah.
India is interesting because people transition to the wellness world from like modeling and from the Bollywood. And they go, I'm into wellness now.
No,
but what
yeah,
do you mean? You're like, you don't.
In a very different change, yeah.
It's in a different change. And it's in its infancy, so it's understandable. But that courage to admit your bullshit, to push yourself out, because the best way, if you want to get into wellness, say, if you want to get into wellness and be a facilitator, right? You can go find some course where they give you an ayahuasca trip and a diploma.
Mm-hmm.
Just by the fact that they have those two things means they're going to charge you 10 times as much as if it was just you doing it, right?
Yeah.
Yoga certification, you know? Come to India, get your yoga teacher certificate, 2,000 euro. If they say, come to India and do yoga for a month, 300 euro.
And that ends.
And so the courage is, the thing that language learning with so much, is like to step out of your comfort zone, you know. For example, with Nikki, who ran the workshop with me there yesterday. Is it yesterday?
Monday. Sunday.
Sorry. Yesterday was a different workshop. We went to the Mahal ashram. I ran a workshop for the kids. The kids were fucking amazing. I had a workshop that they did not wear the headphones or that's your app. It was really deep. Really,
yes.
But Nikita came with and is also doing the massages about them, you know. He learned way more from having the courage to bring his friends, put them together,
yeah,
to organize me and to get down and you know, to really engage in it. And he would have done with some bullshit 3 weeks for a diploma, which is fully organized, full of charlatans, you know. So the courage of like, if you want to host anything or to do anything, is to invite your friends over. Hey guys, I'm going to go to the breathwork workshop. I don't really know what I'm doing. But I will if I do this 10 times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that, I think in all things, like to admit your weaknesses, to admit you're afraid, to even tell other people, then we'll do it anyway. It's courage. Isn't that? I think that's the definition of courage. It's not courageous, no, it's to be afraid and to do it.
Yeah. So do it and move past your...
Move past?
Yeah, sometimes and break.
But always. Because that's what the good stuff is, you know?
Yeah.
Even this guy is a fragment. Like, even like, the first time I was doing a podcast, being about a year and a half old,
mm-hmm,
and talking to the camera, you know, that's already a thing, right?
Yeah.
So when you start, you're like, huh? And then you move on and you're like, okay,
yeah,
wow, that got a lot easier.
Yeah. Then, yeah, I think that mild discomfort is always going to be there, but then pushing through it is also rewarding, and then it's going to, like, you come back to the things that make you feel alive and good.
This is it. And you know, there's that stress point, and with this breath work as well, where I think, guys, you're going to come to this wall.
Yeah.
And this wall is going to feel like it's a real wall. It's not. It's in your mind and it's been put there to test you.
Yeah.
And you have two options. So you need to breathe through it and push through it. And at the end of it, that's where the answer. I mean, life is more about satisfaction and happiness for people. Mm. There's a satisfaction that I thought I couldn't do it. Then I fucking did it. And that alone is already good. Whereas we come to that world, whether being not stepping up at the stage at a comedy night or whatever it is.
Yeah.
To take responsibility for your own life. Then you have to go home. And that's okay too. You have to go home and you have to admit to yourself, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Not this person, not this person, not this person.
Yeah.
I didn't. With the breath work, with so many things, that's what you do. You're creating a dichotomy with a person and not, it's a reason we cannot blame anybody else but themselves.
Yeah.
Not blame, but to accepting, all right, this is where I'm at.
Yeah.
Next fucking time I have an opportunity, I'm not going to, because I don't really live with this feeling yet.
Yeah. Please, again, that was so nice to just hear. It was a very different perspective on wellness. Very different words that, No, but I think it just like comes together so well coherently in the overall aspect of what wellness is. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your time. And it was a really safe space and a really nice, amazing experience to have with your workshop. And thanks a lot for the work that you're doing. And I hope we get a chance to connect again, chat soon. And good luck for the rest of your time in India.
This has been an insightful episode for me, and I hope you felt the same. There are so many takeaways from this conversation, but I would urge you to particularly follow through with the breathwork that James guided us at the beginning of the episode. Breathwork is such a powerful tool in helping us rewire, reconnect with our emotions, and just experience a fuller way of living. So if you haven't already tried it, please try the breathwork. If you have, maybe do a couple of more rounds and see how you feel. Thank you for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and share with anyone you think might enjoy these conversations. Stay tuned for more.